Wednesday, June 13th, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly. I am coming to you from right here in Denver, Colorado. We are in the Mile High City, and you know, we are back for another day of talking sports, hopefully with what is a dose of common sense, maybe just a touch of sarcasm. We are hoping to bring you some insight that you just can't find anywhere else. You know, we pride ourselves on having a little bit of an inside look at some of the world of sports because we've done some of this stuff before. Hopefully, we are keeping you entertained every single day. Happy Wednesday to you. We are slowly but surely getting through yet another week. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, we would love to hear from you. You can hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can go over to Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. You know, sometimes we will post maybe a picture. Maybe we'll post a random thought. Maybe we'll have something that we want to say about a certain game or a certain event that is going on. And we always post a link to the podcast over there every single day. But maybe you have some feedback for the show. Maybe you have a suggestion. Maybe you have a comment. Maybe you need some advice. Whatever it might be, we would love to hear from you. Hey, today on the show, you know that we are now officially reaching the slow time of the year, right? And while you can go tune into some other sports shows that are out there, you can hear them dissecting, I don't know, the Cincinnati Reds bullpen or whatever. I prefer to actually stay awake during my own show. So what we are going to do today, we are going to be joined by a very insightful guy as Russ McKinstry is going to spend some time with us here at The Dose. Now, I will warn you ahead of time. I have a lot of things to discuss with Coach Mack because it's been a while since we spoke with him. You know, I want to look back at some of the things that took place during March Madness. I want to take a look at some of the things going on right now in the NFL, but even looking back a little to the NFL draft. I want to discuss a few teams in the NFL and look at which way they're going. And I definitely need to get his thoughts on the NBA season and the NBA finals, maybe even a little bit on the NBA draft. I think you are going to enjoy this interview. And if we need to, you know, I'll stretch it out over the next few days because I don't want to sit there and say, you know what? I really meant to ask him this and I never got the chance. You know what? I'd rather just enjoy the insight that Russ McKinstry gives us every single time that he stops by. So we are going to take full advantage when we do get to spend some time with him. Hey, we are going to get to our interview with Russ McKinstry right after this. Joining us right now, a great friend of the show, a guy that has taught me a ton about coaching and just sports and just life in general. So to be fair, he is to blame for some of the nonsense you hear on the show every day. Russ McKinstry has coached high school basketball in Colorado, in Kansas, and in Arizona in his career. He has won over 400 games. He's won two state titles. He has sent a number of players off to the collegiate and professional levels. Coach Mack, thank you so much for joining us today here on the Daily Dose. We always enjoy your visits.
A pleasure. Thank you for having me, and hope you're doing well, and happy summertime to you. It's a great time here in Colorado, but it's also a boring time in Colorado as far as sports are concerned, especially when the Rockies are dumping all over the place on us and not a whole lot going on.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to talk about exactly that. The NBA is over. The NHL is over. The NFL and college football seasons are months away. There's no college hoops. It is a rough time of year. So if you don't mind, I was actually going to see maybe we could kind of reset a few things that took place a little while back, kind of catch some things up, but I would love to get your thoughts on a number of different things. And then, of course, I do want to talk some NBA and stuff like that, but I would like to kind of go back and talk just a little March Madness with you, if you're cool with that.
You bet.
You know, we talked just prior to the tournament. Going into that tournament, we discussed, is there any way that a 16 could be a 1. We said on the show, clear back then, hey, it might happen. But Virginia going down to a 16, it surprised me. I felt terrible for Tony Bennett. As cool as it was to kind of see, I felt terrible for Tony Bennett. I felt terrible for those kids. What the heck happened in March Madness that a 16 could be a 1?
Oh, wasn't it crazy? It was a lot of fun to be a part of March Madness this year. And you're right, for such a great coach who has such a great pedigree and always puts quality teams on the floor, you hated to see Coach Bennett go down that way. But, boy, that's what makes that tournament so special. And you know, there were just upsets galore throughout the entire tournament, and it kept you on the edge of your seat and wanting to come back for more. And that's exactly what the NCAA wants to happen. And you know, parity, no doubt, especially with the one-and-done rule and the way scholarships are granted anymore and the way transfers are allowed, I think you're just going to see more and more of this parity. And, you know, I don't know if a Power Five conference is going to win it year in and year out anymore because there is so much parity. So it made for a great tournament, a lot of fun.
Well, it did. And, you know, when I was watching that game, the one thing that I kind of took from it was, as much as it was about the 16 just having the night of their life, and they totally did, it was also about that one going, oh no, we might be that team. We're going to actually do this. This is actually going to happen. And you could just feel them. The harder they tried, the worse they got.
Yeah, I mean, they're super athletic, talented, skilled young men who have been at the top of their game in high school and now at the collegiate level. Pressure will do funny things to people, and pressure and adversity, the last 10, 12, 15 minutes of a ball game, you know, it doesn't speak to what they really are, but for that moment in time, there's no doubt the pressure got to them, and you just could see it coming, you felt it coming, and we've all been there as coaches. You've been there, I've been there, where you think, oh no, and you get that sick, awful pit in your stomach, and you're thinking, this is not going to go well. And there's really nothing you can do to change it, no matter how skilled you are as a coach, no matter how talented you are as a player. Just the dynamics, the variables of play and the momentum and energy and the vibe and everything combined just leads to that shocking moment and that exhilarating moment for the winning team.
You know, Coach, one of the cool things that we did see in that tournament was the run that a team like Loyola Chicago went on. I'm looking at that team. They don't have great athletes. They had a system and they stuck to it. How were they able to have so much success that they had? They went clear to the Final Four.
You know, I'm like you. I don't think it was the individual talent, but it was the sum of the pieces that were put together by that coaching staff and the job they did with that bunch. I think they reminded me of a micro Golden State Warrior team where they just had enough shooters, enough penetrators, enough distributors, enough guys that did the dirty work, that you just kind of had every role perfectly filled and all the kids executed their roles to perfection, and they got some confidence going. And, then again, the pressure of not being the person that's supposed to win it all, and you're playing the team that's supposed to win it all, or they think they're supposed to win it all, so they could play free and loose and confident. And, one position at a time basketball, I'm not really worried about consequences. And lo and behold, you had a magical run. It was really fun to watch. I really liked those kids. I was really impressed with the staff as well, the coaches. I just think that's what we want to see out of college athletics all the time. So I was really impressed by it all.
I was too. And, you know, the biggest takeaway that I have when I'm watching these teams, when I'm watching a Loyola Chicago, might not be as talented athletically. I'm even watching Golden State, and don't get me wrong, Golden State is very talented, but they keep moving on offense. How lost is that in today's game? A moving target is much harder to guard. Just moving changes so much for a team.
Yeah, exactly. And you and I have been around long enough and watched a lot of basketball, and we've gone from the isolation two-man game where you had three guys standing on the opposite side of the court and two guys going two-on-two, and it was a boring, very simplified way of playing basketball. But once you started to get defensive coaches who really understood defensive concepts and could take that away, and you infuse that with coaches who understand, like you said, just the simple idea of movement and ball movement and not worrying about who gets shots, just worrying about the fact that you get good shots. And you put that all together, and all of a sudden you have good basketball that's reemerged from the 1980s when we were watching the Showtime Lakers and the Celtics doing their thing, and it was probably the heyday of NBA basketball, and that's why it was so exciting back then, because that's the concept they were using. So it's kind of amazing to me, Coach, that it took 35, 40 years for guys to figure out, hey, wait a minute, what were they doing back then that was so exciting and working so well? Why don't we go back and try that again? So it's cyclical in nature, basketball is, and it's just shocking that it took, you know, 30, 40 years for people to come back to that wide-open style basketball where you have people moving and you know, sacrificing their own individual stats for the betterment of the team.
Well, and you make a great point, because not only are they moving, not only are they cutting, filling spots, just constant movement, but the unselfishness that we saw from a team like Loyola Chicago, the unselfishness that we see from Golden State, that is something that has been lacking for quite a while. And like you said, going back to the 80s when we saw more of that style of play. You know, Coach, every single year we see the Duke Blue Devils play at a high level. They've got incredible athletes. They've got just studs coming in. Why is it that we rarely see Duke kids go on to success in the NBA?
That's a very, very good question. I think because, and I think that might be changing, hopefully.
Yeah, I think it might be.
The way basketball is trending. But you're right. They weren't taught or they weren't coached in a manner that lined up with what you're going to see NBA coaches do. And you know, just like in the NFL, the NBA is ran by a bunch of retreads. You know, you have coaches that just recycle themselves through the system. But every once in a while, you get a Steve Kerr who actually played the game and actually has some ideas and concepts that. You know, are different than mainstream coaches are utilizing, and he brings it in, and lo and behold, we have this dynasty that's emerging because of all these great players combining to play unselfish basketball. So I think that's what, you know, Coach K does at Duke, because he teaches basketball the right way, and a lot of these guys went on to systems where, again, it was very dummied-down basketball that doesn't fit. You know, players that have high IQs, basketball IQs, that thrive on playing off each other, and you go into a system where it's just one-on-one, penetrate, get fouled, go to the line, one-on-one, you know, kick to a big guy out on a lob if the defense overhelps. Well, Duke players are a little bit more, you know, sophisticated than that, but that doesn't mean they're going to be good NBA players.
Sure. No, and there's no question that they're talented. And like you said, I think that's starting to change. We're starting to see some of those guys, because he's going out and getting some of these one-and-done guys. But for the longest time, we haven't seen it. And I think you're right. I think it's just that they're not always the flashy players. They're just the good, solid, fundamental players. They'll actually pay off for you if you have a coach and a system that lets that work for them.
Right. Coach. Yeah, you know, that's like, you know, J.J. Redick, for example, you know, never probably gets the headlines, but he's a type of guy that wherever he goes, that system seems to work, and he thrives in his role in whatever system he's you know, put on. Now he's with the 76ers, and, you know, they're going to be an up-and-coming team. So, yeah, you know, again, even though you're an NBA coach, even though you're an NFL coach, that doesn't mean you're the smartest coach out there, or maybe even one of the smartest coaches, you know, regardless of high school, college, or the NBA or NFL. It might be who you know and what you know, and you were in the right place at the right time, but you know, I'm very, very rarely impressed by some of the work that those coaches do, because really it's just remanufacturing things that other coaches have done. And if they have the talent, they're successful. But if they don't have talent, they don't turn out to be so successful. And, you know, they don't have any new ideas or concept or coaching, you know, things that they can bring in that really make a difference in their system.
Well, and Coach, speaking of guys who have developed a system, and guys who are finding players to play in that system, Villanova wins their second title in 3 years. Is there a program in the country with a better atmosphere right now than what Jay Wright has built at Villanova?
No, he's kind of captured magic in a bottle, the formula, the secret formula. And I really think it boils down to initially who he gets to play in his backcourt. You know, he'll find two, three, you know, in this year, four guys that are high IQ backcourt players at the point guard, shooting guard, swing position, and then they have some backups that come in and can fulfill those roles when those players are in foul trouble or need a break. So, you know, at the collegiate level, I've always believed and will always believe that, you know, guard play is the foundation and where good programs start. And then if you can fill in around top-notch guard play, you've got a chance to be really successful. And he has done that. He goes out and finds extremely tough-minded, skilled, competitive guards, and then, you know, he fills in around him. And he's been very successful recently at doing that. And And, yeah, that was a really impressive team this year. I really enjoyed watching them play.
I did, too. I love their toughness. And like you talked about, the guard play with Jalen Brunson, Dante DiVincenzo, tough, scrappy kids. I don't know if either one of those kids is going to be great in the NBA. If they get the right opportunity, I think they could at least have a shot. But those are just tough, hard-nosed kids that go out, don't mind playing defense, don't mind playing unselfishly, and they're really, really smart and have that high basketball IQ that you want.
Yeah, they are extremely high-level players, and you're right, might not translate to the NBA game, and it might, and you're right, it just depends on who picks them up. I'd love to see actually the Nuggets get one or both of them. I think that would be awesome. But again, once they go to that next level, you got to have a coach that understands the game and understands how to put pieces in a system and make it work for the players instead of trying just to fit, you know, players into their system and not make any changes to adjust to the strengths of the players. So, you know, it's the same thing you see in the NFL, you know, over and over, where coaches are demanding to run their system, but yet the players have different talents and different strengths, and they aren't utilized because coaches demand that their system be utilized, and that just drives me crazy.
Well, no, and you make such a good point with coaches. They're going to stick in that system. They're going to force those players to play in that system no matter what.
Right.
And you're going to just fit my system no matter what. And you're going, let the kid play. He can obviously play, but we shall see. You know, we could talk college hoops for pretty much the rest of the day. I actually want to switch over. Hey, it's a little ways off, but we do need to talk a little bit of NFL, don't we? The NFL draft.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I'd be disappointed if we didn't.
You know we have to. Now, first and foremost, and I know this is, you know, we talk about all different sorts of things. We're going to go a little hometown here. We have to talk a little bit about the Denver Broncos. The Broncos completely revamped their draft strategy. They went with different players than we've seen over the last couple of years. Just the type of player they took. Did you like the moves? Did you like the Bradley Chubb pick? Did you like some of the other guys that they took in this draft? I was a little bit surprised. I was pleasantly surprised, but I was a little bit surprised by what they did.
No, I would agree with you. You know, throughout the whole, you know, offseason, you know, February, March, leading up to the draft, early April, you know, I really was kind of excited about possibly getting one of the quarterbacks, just because I think, you know, the NFL and the way the rules are now geared, and really you're not allowed to play defense anymore, so it's really become a glorified, you know, 7-on-7 flag football league, unfortunately, but that's the way it's going and it's the way it's going to be. So I was hoping to get a primetime quarterback, but when, you know, when that wasn't a possibility, I was really, you know, excited about the first three picks, you know, with Chubb and Courtland Sutton and Royce Freeman. I thought those were excellent choices. And then to get that linebacker from Iowa, that Joey Russell, I was excited about that pick too. So, yeah, I thought, you know, I thought the change in strategy was really intelligent, and it gave me some hope that maybe they're starting to figure some things out over at Dove Valley. And now you got to, again, like we've been talking about for the last 15 minutes, now can the coaches take that talent and utilize it in a system that's geared towards the player's strengths and not utilize to some archaic offensive system that won't make any difference who you draft?
Well, and you spoke about the players that they took. They went with character guys. They went with proven guys. They went with less project guys. Over the last couple of years, we've seen Paxton Lynch, never proven, taken far too high. We've seen Shane Ray, possible talent, but a little bit of questions with his character. That's not what they did here. They went and got guys that, I mean, these are captains of their team. These are proven guys that went out and performed. Why do you think they made that big switch? Did like a light go on for John Elway? What's going on here?
Well, you know, honestly, the draft record of Elway, let's say from 2011, 2012, with a, you know, a couple exceptions, Von Miller being one, obviously, you know, the track record's just been horrendous.
Yes, it has.
You know, and because John Elway's an icon, and, you know, he's my favorite player of all time, you know, so I love the guy. But if you really honestly just step back and you weren't a Bronco fan, you would look at our draft choices and you would just be aghast at how horrific the drafts have been. So any step like this is a smart step, but then you have to ask, why in the heck did you ever go away from that formula? Why wouldn't you, use that formula year in and year out, because it doesn't matter if you're a football team, a corporation, a small business, a public school, a private school. That should be your formula. I mean, you're looking for quality people that have talent. Why would you ever go with anything but that? So I will give them credit for figuring it out, but I also have to wonder what the heck took so long.
Well, and it makes me wonder, they're talking about, you know, there's a lot of questions in ownership right now for those people who are not in this Denver area or whatever. There's a number of questions with what's going to happen with Pat Bowlen's team. Pat Bowlen not being in the best health. Does one of his kids take it over? A lot of questions about who's going to get it. There's a trust set up. The trust is not approving very many people. Coach, it almost made me wonder if, with all the questions within ownership, if John Elway performed as though his boss was looking over his shoulder and saying, hey, like right now, there's nobody's job who's safe.
Yeah, you know, and that whole ownership thing is really interesting, and how that's going to play out is going to be, you know, really critical for the Broncos and the community of Denver. You know, it's so hard to mix family and business. So, you know, I think the fact that there's so many kids, and really it kind of sounds like it's boiled down to really just two of the daughters that, you know, are going to be at the forefront of deciding who takes ownership. And can they even, you know, find a equitable way that doesn't destroy the family to, you know, award one of the kids ownership, or will the trust fund decide, hey, we can't even do this without completely tearing down this organization, and then they have to go outside to find buyers. So it's going to be interesting, and, you know, you always think of Elway as being one of those potential people that ends up buying the Broncos, and, you know, which would be fabulous, but, you know, there's, you know, all those dynamics and variables behind the scenes ultimately impact what's going on, you know, with the things that we see as a public and as fans. So, you know, it's probably simple for us to have all the answers, but there's probably a whole lot of dynamics behind the scenes that are making this very convoluted.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. Here's the bottom line. Is there any reason to think that this team can make some strides this year? Can we see some improvement with Case Keenum at quarterback?
Great question. You know, and I was thinking about that today because I knew we'd be talking Broncos, and I thought, what am I going to say to Dells that really makes any sense, that would give some insight into what I think is going on? You know, to me, the coaching staff has to prove that they can use good judgment, and that's where they've lost me, coach, the last three or so years. You know, what they did with Jamal Charles, what they did with, you know, Peyton Manning at the end of his career, what they've done with the tight end, what they haven't done with the offensive line. I've lost trust in them to use good judgment. And it seems like they're basing playing time on other things besides who's earned and who merits playing time, you know. And, you know, putting Peyton Manning under center at the end of his career, which made, you know, no sense whatsoever. And ever since that took place, I have just seen one bad judgment by coaches after bad judgment by coaches that just continue to just really make me nervous about what direction the Broncos are going. So until I can see, you know, that they're going to utilize a D'Angelo Henderson, that they're going to utilize a Jake Butt, and Jake Butt's a solid tight end choice, that they have figured some things out along the offensive line, and that Case Keenum really isn't a journeyman quarterback, that they saw something in him that translates to a full-time starter that can stay healthy and lead the Broncos to, you know, 9, 10, 11 victories. Until I see actions on their part, I'm real skeptical, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I am too. I'm not sure exactly what to believe because, like you said, I think they've assembled a couple pieces. Now it's up to this coaching staff. Can you coach these guys up and get something out of them? We haven't seen it yet. I'm really, really hoping. I mean, there are certain aspects to what they've done. Bringing in Case Keenum is not the worst choice. He's a tough guy. He's going to have to be tough behind that awful offensive line. Can they adjust their system and say, okay, we know we have a bad offensive line. The offensive line was bad when Peyton was here. You know what changed? Peyton was smart enough to get rid of the ball quick enough. I don't know if they can make those adjustments. I don't know if they're smart enough to do that. I guess we're going to see. I've got a question for you. You have the first pick in the NFL draft this past year. You're the Cleveland Browns. Are you gutsy enough to take a 6-foot quarterback in Baker Mayfield? Are you going with that pick? That's a gutsy pick.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and that's where, you know, like you, I would love to be on the personnel side of a professional organization where you got to actually get to meet with these players, test them both physically, mentally, you know, test their emotional IQ to see really where they are at a competitive level. And, you know, and you've seen it too, when you have Michael Jordan or Larry Bird or these mega superstars who just, they have a certain mentality about them that makes them very unique to the rest of the world. And, you know, if they saw that uniqueness, that cutthroat ability to, I'm going to succeed no matter what happens, no matter what is thrown at me, because I'm an ultimate competitive winner. And there's very, very few of those people that are out there, because really those type of people have the attitude of they just don't give a hell about anything else, about anybody else. All they worry about is being the best at what they do. And there aren't too many people that are built that way. Most people have empathy, compassion. You know, they feel for their competitors. They have demons that they're fighting inside. They might lack some confidence or whatever. But there are just a few very minute cases of people who are ultimate competitors who just have all that packaged. And, you know, does Baker have that? I don't know. I doubt it. So I probably would not have chosen him, but if I had the chance to really get to know him and I sensed that in him, then I would have taken the gamble and said, hell yeah, let's go with it. Because I believe it. I believe in people that are built that way because they are so rare. And when you come across one, you know you've got one.
Well, and you make a good point, because I will give Baker this. When he walks on a football field, he looks around to everyone else and says, okay, who's the second best player here? Because I already know who the best is. And there's something to be said for that kind of kid. Man, I just look at the NFL and I say, in the history of the league, forget the Browns, forget one team, in the history of the league, there have been like five or six really, really good quarterbacks at 6 foot. Maybe he's that guy. I hope he's that guy. I'm kind of rooting for the kid. But man, that is a big...
Yeah, I am too. I hope he's a Drew Brees. You know, if he has that level of success or comes close to Drew Brees, and I'm always rooting for the little guys because the rest of us aren't freaks of nature like the rest of the NFL. So when you get, you know, a guy that has common statutes and, you know, physical abilities and so forth, and they go out and overachieve, you'd like to see that story. But, I don't know. I took a lot of guts on the Cleveland Browns part, and you know, odds are saying that the Cleveland Browns are the Cleveland Browns again, and they screwed up. But we'll see. We'll find out.
Hey, just a quick reminder that if you do have any shopping that you might need to do, you're going to want to head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. June's Loot Crate theme is out. It is called Colossal, and it features items from Godzilla, Marvel Comics, Ghostbusters, and Jurassic Park, but maybe none of those franchises interest you. That's all right. Go over to Loot Crate. Trust me, you are going to find the franchise that you are looking for because they have a ton of things over there. The best part, of course, about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, be sure you type Daily Dose, one word, DALYDOSE, in that coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order. It's always good to save just a little money when you get the chance. Hey, like I said, we have a lot more to get to with Russ McKinstry. Yes, we did talk some March Madness. We did talk a little bit of NFL and some of the NFL draft, but we have a lot more to get to. You know, I want to ask him, can the Philadelphia Eagles stay on top? Are the New England Patriots starting to show some signs that maybe there could be some cracks in that foundation? Plus, we still have to get to the NBA. We still have to discuss the NBA Finals. What in the world happened with J.R. Smith and with LeBron James and what was going on over on that bench? Trust me, we have a lot more to get to with Coach Mack. So be sure that you tune in tomorrow as we continue this conversation. You know, this dude just understands sports. He understands players. He understands coaching. So we have a lot more to get to. Hey, I have to say thank you all so much for listening to and for sharing the show. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. If you would like to contact us, hit us up at dailydosesports@gmail.com or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. We would love to hear from you. I have to say thank you to Coach Mack for stopping by, for spending some time. We can't wait to keep it going tomorrow. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a wonderful Wednesday.